About 30 members of the Treasury Department today spearheaded a rally outside of the Earl Cabell Federal Building.
If you catch a cracker lighting a torch to any black church, we are to send them to the cemetery.
The Klan is not the one that went over to Greenville and burnt the church.
Nothing good can come of it. They won't listen to any outsider.
The infection causes immediate respiratory failure, and scientists claim that mutations are now transmittable between humans.
Today is Friday, April 28th, 2017, and you are listening to A Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio, a podcast of political and social commentary for the radical left, an audio attack on the establishment's carefully crafted delusions of reality with ideas, discussion, and music. Thanks for listening, but don't forget to think. Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is going to get primaried, which doesn't surprise me since she's actually a Republican. Maybe this time around, California voters will realize that voting for a 700-year-old war hawk who hates healthcare and loves being rich just because she has a D next to her name probably isn't all that great of an idea. Republican Congressional Representative Lamar Smith of Texas is getting challenged too, which is excellent, because he thinks that meteorologists are to blame for extreme weather events, and we just need better forecasting instead of, I don't know, addressing the causes. Ann Coulter got shut down. Nobody really gives a shit about what she has to say anyway, honestly, but it did bring up the whole "but my free speech" conversation again. Just shows how much neoliberals don't really have a problem with racism as long as they can look morally superior. Fucking idiots. All right, all right, all right. Friday, well, could be Saturday for you, Sunday, Monday, could be any day of the week for you, I don't know what day you're listening to this on, Friday for me. So welcome to this Friday edition of A Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio. I am your host, as always, Richard Waite, and it is a pleasure to be with you today. Got some things to talk about, as we do. Few things in the news, huh? A little bit. We got something I actually haven't seen covered very much. I wonder why. House Minority Leader, Miss Nancy Pelosi, you know her, you love her. She's gonna get primaried. That's great. I love that. Like I said, that doesn't really surprise me. Might surprise, you know, some of the more establishment Democrats who have such faith in the Democratic establishment for unknown reasons. I mean, you know, losing 1,000 seats in 8 years, I can see why they would have some faith in the leadership of, well, Nancy Pelosi. She is the minority leader, and the Democrats are currently the minority, so that would make her a Democrat, right? Except for, I don't know, in policy. She's pretty much a Republican. She's extremely center. We'll say that. She's extremely center. Extremely center. If she's not right of center. And I kind of feel like she is. Some of you may have remembered, you may have seen it, or at least seen the video clip of it, where a young man at a Nancy Pelosi CNN, I think it was CNN, might have been MSNBC, CNN town hall. It was CNN. So young man by the name of Trevor Hill posed a question to Miss Pelosi as far as capitalism goes. Trevor Hill got a huge boost in his social media following following this question and his appearance on CNN. And it was great because, I mean, most town halls that are shown on cable news networks such as CNN, they're all scripted. They're all planned out. The questions are given to whoever it may be, in this case, Nancy Pelosi. At least they have an idea of what the questions are going to be, and the answers are quite prepared, and it's quite obvious that that's what's going on. But Trevor had some balls. He didn't ask the question that he was supposed to ask, and instead asked his very, very own question right there on nationally broadcast cable news, and it kind of caught Nancy off guard. Like I said, some of you may have seen this, some of you may have heard it or whatever, but let's just listen to what Mr. Hill asked Miss Pelosi and then her answer to said question.
Let me communicate this. This is what we call in this business a soft landing. It's a lighter question from our friend Trevor Hill. He's a student at NYU. He's from San Diego. Trevor.
Now I'll stop right there for just one second. Do you see that? Do you see that lead up right there? Tapper, Jake Tapper. He's like, and here we have a softball question for you. This should be easier because it's the last question of the day, so we call this a soft landing. Look at Nancy. Isn't she great? But Trevor had other plans.
Good evening. Thank you for your question. Sorry, just for
good evening, Congresswoman. Thank you for being here, and thank you for taking my question. I was originally slated to ask a pretty soft question, but given the dire circumstances, I'm so sorry, Mr. Tapper. Given the dire circumstances our country is in, I wonder if you'd indulge me in a little bit more of a serious question about the future of the Democratic Party.
How mad do you think Jake Tapper was right then? He's like, dude, I just said you're going to give a softball question. What are you doing right now? But Trevor was extremely polite and respectful, even called him Mr. Tapper. That was very nice of Trevor. I'm not so nice. Jake Tapper's a putz. I'm sorry. He really is. I got no problem saying that. He's straight putz. But Trevor's like, I'm not going to, what's your favorite color? Why do you like pastel? That's not what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask a real question.
What I've seen on NYU's campus and what I've seen in polls all over, I mean, CNN even, a Harvard University poll last May showed that people between the ages of 18 and 29, not just Democrats, not just leftists, 51% of people between 18 and 29 no longer support the system of capitalism. And that's not me asking you to make a radical statement about capitalism, but I'm just telling you that my experience is that the younger generation is moving left on economic issues. And I've been so excited to see how Democrats have moved left on social issues. As a gay man, I've been very proud to see you fighting for our rights and for many Democratic leaders fighting for our rights. But I wonder if there's anywhere you feel that the Democrats could move farther left to a more populist message, the way the alt-right has sort of captured this populist strain on the right wing, if you think we could make a more stark contrast to right-wing economics.
In that moment, Trevor Hill became my hero. He did. I swear to God, immediately, the second that he asked that question, I pulled my phone out and I logged onto Twitter. I found him and I followed him. I had to. And apparently I wasn't the only one. I don't mind saying that I jumped on that bandwagon because he deserved it. And But notice how he framed that question. He actually, you know, gave her some facts and statistics, some polling numbers, things that he had observed that are verifiable, and even complimented her and the Democratic Party. And this is after seeing, you know, how the Democratic Party handled the primaries, how they handled the general election, and the fact that they've lost so much under leadership like Nancy Pelosi. But he was respectful and he framed the question very well. I thought anyway. But I think the most interesting part of this is what her answer was.
Well, I thank you for your question, but I have to say we're capitalist. And that's just the way it is.
We're capitalists. And that's just the way it is. This guy, Trevor Hill, literally just said the majority of young people who are going to be the voter base, the majority voter base here real soon, don't like capitalism. Oh, you silly, silly boy. We're capitalists, and that's all there is to it, okay? Sit down. Shut up. We've got the reins. We've got the ship under control. You just sit down. You kidding me right now? You couldn't come up with a slightly better answer than that? Just a little bit? I mean, we're not even going to listen to the whole five-minute babbling trying to explain how capitalism is so great, but we can make it better. She babbled for 5 minutes in this answer, and it was absolutely absurd. You can find it. It's on YouTube. I'll provide a link to it. But completely absurd. And I understand. Yeah, she wasn't prepared for the question. She didn't know that the question was coming. But Nancy, you're a politician. Talking off the cuff and sounding like you know what you're talking about is supposed to be your specialty. Now, I know that you're 1,000 years old and maybe, you know, you've got some early onset dementia coming on. And I'm not trying to downplay that at all. For anybody that's had a family member go through that process of dementia, Alzheimer's, my grandmother did on my mom's side. And while I wasn't there to see it, witness it personally, it did have an effect on my mother when my mother would go visit her and not even be recognized. So that is, I'm not trying to downplay that at all. That's very serious. Nancy's 77 years old, and it is quite possible that that's going on. And if you listen to some of the other statements she's made publicly since then, she's not very good at talking. Maybe she was at one point. I don't know, but she's not now. And that in and of itself, why is she the minority leader? She should be replaced in that role at the very least. And honestly, she really is. I'm kind of tired of her. Apparently, a lot of other people are, too, because she is getting challenged. She's getting a challenge by a San Francisco attorney by the name of Stephen Jaffe, J-A-F-F-E, who is a lifelong Democrat, but I'm not going to hold that against him because he is doing or he's trying to. He's going to try to do what no Democrat has been able to do so far, which is make it to a runoff primary election against House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. This is from the Los Angeles Times. Jeff is an employment attorney who became a volunteer for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign last year. Oh, fantastic. I'm not mad at those credentials. I'm sorry that you're a Democrat, but at least you were a Bernie Democrat. Jeff says that he was a pretty hardcore Bernie supporter. Gave money to the campaign, volunteered during the Nevada caucuses, and he was one of two attorneys who filed for an injunction on behalf of Sanders supporters in the California primary requesting revotes and an extension of the voter registration deadline. That request was denied. Now, those of you who paid close attention to the primaries, you may remember that there were some contentions as far as voter registrations go. Some people tried to register for as independent, ended up registering for the American Independent Party, I believe is the name of it. It's a far right wing party. It's a, you know, fascist party. It's, you know, the alt-right. And that was completely unintended. So they were trying to figure out a way to fix all of that before the primary time, or to redo the primary voting. But of course, that was denied. Jaff said he was devastated by Sanders' loss to Hillary Clinton in the primary season, and that Sanders in part inspired him to run against Pelosi. He supports single-payer health care, and he has criticized Nancy Pelosi for raising money from corporations and special interests. From Jaff himself, in an interview, he says, quote, "I know that Mrs. Pelosi's strategy has been to essentially ignore anyone who has challenged her, but I anticipate she'll have a more difficult time doing that with my candidacy." He also said that there's a rumbling, a wave of activism here by people who have really never stepped forward before. He thinks that if local progressive activists can propel him to a runoff with Pelosi, he'll have quite a realistic chance of winning. I certainly hope so, because it seems to me that Jaff holds the same opinion of Nancy Pelosi that I do, in that she is a Democrat only in label. She takes money from big corporations, like most Democrats do, takes money from special interests, like most Democrats do. She's also against single-payer health care, which apparently most Democrats are as well, and Hillary Clinton was as well. And Democrats wonder why we view them the same way as we view Republicans. It's because you do the same damn thing. They just act like they like Black people and Mexicans and women and gay people a little more. That's it. That's and then they act like it. It's just an act. They don't do any policy that shows that. They just say that. And Nancy Pelosi is most certainly a Republican. If you look back to 2013, I believe. Yes, 2013. She says, quote, "It is clear that the American people are weary of war. However, Assad gassing his own people is an issue of our national security, regional stability, and global security." This is Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, talking about Barack Obama, basically saying that he's not being tough enough on Syria and Assad. And this is after the incident that is now being touted around once again for bombing Syria and being aggressive towards Assad, where the entire global community was completely convinced that Assad had gassed his own people. Meanwhile, there's a shit ton of evidence that says that he didn't. But, you know, let's just ignore that. Forget it. Doesn't matter. So Nancy Pelosi of the Democratic Party is being tough on Obama back then in 2013, saying that he needs to go after Assad. And then what did she say when Donald Trump launched 59 Tomahawk missiles after another gassing incident that we still don't know who really did it, but doesn't make any sense whatsoever for Assad to have done it? What did she say? She's standing there with her bae, Chuck Schumer, holding hands, saying, "Tonight's strike in Syria appears to be a proportional response to the regime's use of chemical weapons." Nancy Pelosi is more of a war hawk than some Republicans are. Some Republicans are saying, "Hey, we might not have should have done that." And she's like, "Oh, yeah, no, it was great. It was great. Do it again. Do it again." Chuck Schumer, same thing. This is the resistance? This is the Trump resistance? "Well, it was a proportional response, and we endorse this attack, but resist Trump." Are you fucking kidding me right now? So, yeah. So, she's getting primaried. She's getting challenged, and that's amazing. I certainly hope that Jaff is victorious. He's got my endorsement for whatever that's worth. And if I was a California resident in that district, I most certainly would vote for him over Nancy Pelosi, because Nancy Pelosi is a Republican. You need only to look at her record of supporting war based on flimsy or non-existent evidence, her support for health insurance companies rather than single payer or even a public option, taking money from large corporations in exchange for her vote on certain things, and her love for all things capital and corporate. I mean, that's textbook Republican. That's textbook conservative. She has a D next to her name, but she is most certainly a Republican. And for far too long, in my opinion, she's been lying to the California voter base about her political affiliation in order to retain her seat of power, because California is highly, highly liberal, especially in the metro. She is the representative of the 12th congressional district of the state of California, which the 12th district is entirely inside the city of San Francisco. And San Francisco is about as liberal as it gets. So this whole time, she's been running on the Democratic ticket with a D next to her name, but espousing Republican views constantly. So Nancy Pelosi's a liar. She's a war hawk. She's a corporatist. She does not care about the people. And not to mention that, she's such a war hawk that she will use false evidence, ignore new evidence that contradicts that evidence, and supports bombing a sovereign nation just on that evidence because of our regional interests. And generally speaking, when we're talking about regional interests, what are we talking about when we're talking about the Middle East? Oh, I don't know. Fucking oil, natural resources. Those are our regional interests, not the people. That's for damn sure. So I'll be happy to see Nancy Pelosi go. And before any of you scream, oh, just being sexist, you just don't like her, it's a man running against a woman, you're just being sexist. It's sexism. That's the only thing it could ever be. When there's a female candidate and you support the male candidate over the female candidate, it must be sexism. You're a sexist. Misogyny. No, that's not it. Nancy Pelosi is a conservative. She's a Republican. And she's a liar. And she's a war hawk. And she opposes single-payer health care. And gets hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from the healthcare sector. Oh, imagine that. Imagine that. Huh. So yeah, she's a corporate shill. She takes money from special interests, and she's a war hawk, and that sounds a whole lot like a Republican to me. So if you are in California in the 12th congressional district, I highly recommend that you look into this Jeff fellow. He seems like a pretty good guy. So far, anyway. I don't know a whole lot about him personally. But he opposes Nancy Pelosi for the same reasons that I oppose Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, he's got my support, and he should have your support as well, especially if you don't like war and you don't like people that take corporate donations and then act on the behalf of their corporate donors rather than their constituents. So that's about all I'll say about that. Going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about another challenge that's going on in the state of Texas. I'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Until the philosophy which old one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Miss a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. And it's a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality will remain but a fleeting illusion to be pursued but never attained. Now everywhere is war. War. And until the ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, South Africa, by human bondage, have been toppled, totally destroyed. Well, everywhere is war. Miss a war. War in the east, war in the west, war up north, war. And we know we shall win, as we are confident in the victory of good over evil. Good over evil, yeah. Good over evil.
All right, welcome back to a Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio. That short break actually turned into a several hour long break. Day kind of took a left turn there, not in a bad way. Just had some things to take care of, had some responsibilities that I had to attend to, and I wasn't able to get back to the microphone until right now. And so here it is. It's a little later in the evening. Quite possibly won't even get this posted till tomorrow. It'll be after midnight by the time I do, if I do it tonight, or I might just do it in the morning, but regardless. So we're back anyway. And real quick, I just want to take a moment to remind everybody that you can subscribe to A Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio on Apple Podcasts is what it's called now. It used to be called iTunes. I'm not sure where iTunes is going, if it's going anywhere, but now they're under the branding of Apple Podcasts instead. So you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe on Stitcher Radio or TuneIn Radio. Please subscribe, leave a review. They do help. And a rating and all that. Or you can subscribe directly to amostlyaccurateview.com. It's up to you. But thanks for all your support so far. And with all that being said, we're going to get into the next segment now, which kind of ties into the first segment a little bit. If I sound like I'm talking a little quieter, it's because it is
nighttime around here, and there are some people sleeping, so I don't want to be too loud. But then again, you know me. Sometimes I get a little heated. Sometimes I get a little passionate. And well, we'll just have to see how this goes, huh? But anyway, so yeah, so we just talked about Nancy Pelosi is getting challenged, and that's great because the Democratic Party that claims it is for the people isn't. And it's real close to the Republican Party. So obviously the people have no real representation in Congress, and that's kind of shitty since we're supposed to be a nation of the people and by the people and for the people, but we aren't. We haven't been for a long time. Really, maybe ever, if you really look at the history of the U.S. in a critical light. Personally, I wouldn't mind if we just, you know, burned the whole thing down, started over from scratch, rebuilt our nation and society and our global community in a truly egalitarian way, where every person was truly equal, regardless of ethnicity or spirituality or any other demographic division that the ruling class applies to us. But in the meantime, until that happens, we have what we have. And, I mean, maybe we can try to change it from within. Personally, I don't think we have time for that, given, you know, the state of the world and considering the environmental destruction that our capitalist tendencies have brought and are still bringing upon us. But, I mean, you know, hey, we're capitalists and that's all there is to it. But, I mean, maybe it'll work. Maybe we can change it from within. But if that's the case, I really hope that we see a drastic ideological shift and fast. And yeah, like I said, not just in the U.S., but around the globe. But I mean, until then, you know, we have a system before us and we have a choice to make, and we can be active in that system and try to affect real change from within, or we can ignore it and act like our political apathy is some form of activism. I mean, you know, that choice is up to you. Obviously, you can try to fool yourself into believing that your unwillingness to push for change within the current structure is, you know, doing something. But you aren't fooling me anyway. I mean, it isn't that you have to vote for the lesser of two evils, and it isn't that it doesn't matter who you vote for, so why vote at all? I mean, if you want to perpetuate the myth of the two-party duopoly and act like you only have two choices, then I guess keep that up. But you have far more choices than that. I mean, let me rephrase that a little bit. The two-party duopoly absolutely exists. It's not a myth. What I meant by that was the myth that is put forth by the party propaganda that you have to choose either Republican or Democrat. There are more choices than that. You know, and yes, it will take a lot of effort to change our ridiculous voting system, which is also another reason why it's very necessary to break that two-party duopoly. But to do that, we actually have to vote for third party candidates. We have to vote for independents. We have to vote for other parties and support other parties and promote their platforms. And to not support any candidate simply because, you know, you think that the Democratic and Republican parties are just too strong, that only strengthens those two parties that much more. So apathy is definitely not the way to go. So Pelosi's challenger is a great opportunity to affect that sort of change. Now, yes, he's a lifelong Democrat, but he isn't the same kind of Republican Democrat that Pelosi is. And while that will certainly make things tougher for him in an election. And also it'll make things tougher for him in Congress, until more people like him are put into office. But this is still a great opportunity to fight back against the establishment. But there are also other ways. So any of you that have been listening to this show for any amount of time or have engaged with me on Twitter or on Facebook, if you haven't already, you can find me on Twitter at @mostly_accurate, or you can find me on Facebook. That's facebook.com/amostlyaccurateview. Or you can go read anything that I've put on amostlyaccurateview.com. Those of you that have already done that will already know this. And honestly, if you've listened to either the first segment of today's show or anything I've said over the past couple of minutes, really, you'll know that I am not a Democrat. And I am not a Republican. I'm not a conservative. And I damn sure am not a fucking liberal, because liberals say they are progressives, but they aren't. They're centrist capitalists. Take Nancy Pelosi's quote. Neoliberals are the same exact thing as neoconservatives, and the center left is actually right wing. They just don't know it because the right wing is so far right. The Overton window in the U.S. is almost completely entirely on the right, and there really isn't two parties. There are only different factions of the corporate party. A few months ago, I would have called myself a progressive, not a Democrat, not a liberal, but a progressive. And I would have been very angry at being called a Democrat or a liberal. No, I'm a progressive. I'm on the left. Those guys aren't on the left. But honestly, I'm even further left than that now. But with all that being said, we have to realize that there are certain ways that we can affect change within the system we have, at least until revolution comes and we can rebuild the system in a better way. So since this is the system that we have and we need to work on changing it until such time as we can completely replace it with something more egalitarian, we have to look at opportunities that we have to affect such change. Now, these include such opportunities as, like I said, supporting what the establishment will call fringe candidates in an attempt to draw support from them. Calling them fringe makes people say, "Oh, it's just one of those crazy fringe candidates." Pay any attention to them, so they draw attention away from those candidates, and in that way, they protect their control over the playing field. Now, you can get people to talk about issues, and you can get them to realize that there are alternatives out there. And when you do that, you open the door to a wider understanding that, as a whole, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans have the interests of the people in mind. And generally, the candidates that these parties run are going to follow suit and toe party lines. Now, there are exceptions within both parties. They are obviously few and far between, but those exceptions do exist within the parties. But as a whole, generally speaking, the Democrats and the Republicans, neither one of them have the interests of their voter base in mind. They have only the interests of their corporate donors in mind. But sometimes, though, you have to realize that a fight is better won through pragmatic means. Now, don't get me started on the 2016 presidential election, because that is a completely different beast. That is not a matter for pragmatism. I'm going to get started on it anyway. Jeez. The pragmatic vote was to vote for Hillary over Donald Trump. Well, that honestly, that depends on who you are. I think the pragmatic vote was to not vote for either one of them, because in that instance, you have but one chance to shake the establishment. You have but one chance to shake up the establishment of the executive branch. There's only one person to vote for. Okay? So that's your one shot. You want to waste it on pragmatism, or do you want to vote for the person who actually represents your ideals? Now, when you're talking about Congress, it's a bit of a different beast, because there are so many seats and there are a lot of other things that need to be taken into consideration when you're talking about votes for seats in Congress, because you're not always just voting for one seat. So I don't like the Democrats. I've made that plainly clear. But I do support the current challenger to Pelosi, even though he is a Democrat. I prefer him over Pelosi because I despise Pelosi that much more. And from what I can tell, Jaffe is, if that is indeed how you pronounce his name, again, J-A-F-F-E. I'm assuming it's Jaffe. It could be, you know, sometimes J's are pronounced as H's. It could be half or some, but Jaffe is far more in line with my views than the Democratic Party as a whole is in line with my views. And maybe as time goes, we learn more about Jaffe, my opinion of him will change, or maybe I'll become aware of some other candidate in that race that is even more in line with my views, and I'll pull my support and go in a different direction. Not that, you know, my support is going to make that much of a difference, if at all, but I offer it nonetheless. But that brings me to this next story, and this is why it's important to consider there are more. You might be voting for one candidate, but oftentimes you're voting for more than one seat. And this is how. So this story, it's about the guy in Congress. He's a real gem of a fella. Goes by the name of Lamar Smith from Texas. He's from Texas, good old boy. So there's an article from the Huffington Post that tells a story about Representative Smith, who is a Republican. I know that's a big surprise coming from Texas, right? I do have a little bit more about that, but we'll get to that in a minute. So Smith has been a Texas representative since the 80s. And he held office in the state legislature before that. And he has always been extremely popular in his district. He wins his elections, and even the times he's been primaried, never with less than 60% of the vote. A lot of times he would get 70% or more. And one time he even hit 80% of the vote. Now, this isn't really that surprising, because his district holds some of the wealthiest areas of San Antonio and Austin, and rich people always get richer under Republicans, so rich people love Republicans. So he has a lot of support in his district, and challengers, even other Republicans, never even come close to unseating him, which makes this next guy pretty ballsy. Smith is going to be challenged yet again, but he's going to be challenged by a Democrat, a guy named Derek Crow. But this Democrat is going to challenge Smith on something that you might not think would make a difference in Texas, especially in a rich as fuck area of Texas. But this time it might be a little different. Crow is going to hit Smith hard on his climate change policy, or more specifically, the fact that Smith doesn't have one. Smith is the biggest climate change denier in Congress, according to some. I would be one. So this HuffPost article talks about Crow and Smith, but most notably about the way Crow might be able to defeat Smith. Now, you would think that it might be difficult to hammer home a platform built on climate change activism in a place like Texas, where there is a lot of oil money flowing. oil companies don't care about climate change, right? I mean, they actively suppress science about climate change, and they misinform the public. They pay for other studies to be performed that seek foregone conclusions that the evidence of climate change is inconclusive. And being that Smith represents a district that is extremely wealthy, and likely a lot of those people are wealthy because of oil, this all, you know, seems kind of like a tough sell, right? Here's another factor in that. You know, nothing's ever really a big deal until it happens to you. And then so in 2015, Texas and Oklahoma were hit with a huge storm system. It was not quite this time of year in 2015. It was over Memorial Day weekend, 2015. And this storm system, it caused massive flooding, tornadoes, a shitload of damage. Homes were ripped away from their foundations. People died. Smith's district was hit incredibly hard. And Smith turned around and blamed the almost $3 billion in damage on the Weather Service. He said that if forecasting was better, then the lives lost and damage incurred could have been avoided. Dude, it was ripping houses off of their foundations. What are you going to, their sandbags ain't going to help that. There were tornadoes. Better forecasting. So in the meantime, we have Donald Trump cutting funding to science programs like the EPA and the National Weather Service. And meanwhile, this oil-rich Republican congressional representative is saying that the damage caused by extreme weather is to be blamed on meteorologists. Right on. Continuing on, Smith has been using his power in Congress to push pseudoscience. This guy got appointed to chair of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Are you fucking kidding me right now? He accused actual scientists of rigging data. He tried to defund research. I mean, I guess Trump took care of that for him, I guess. But the point is, this guy is a danger. Climate change is our number one threat. It's the biggest threat to the existence of all humanity and most of life on Earth. And this guy wants to defund it, and he calls the actual science behind it bunk. And, looky here, he takes a lot of money from Big Oil. Big Oil is the number one contributor to the chair of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Wow. What a country. So we need to get rid of this Smith guy. And Crow might be the guy to do it. Now, if someone better comes along, fine. Good. Great. Amazing. Let's do it. But until then, we have Crow. Maybe a Green will run. They've done it in this district before. They didn't win, but, maybe they'll run. Usually it's a Democrat, maybe a Libertarian. And then there's Smith, who never loses. So for now, Crow it is. Now he calls himself a nerd for science. And so at least he understands the importance of addressing climate change. Which will probably honestly be tough to do under a Trump administration, but it'll be a lot tougher to fight if this fucking Smith guy is left in a position like he has on the goddamn Science, Space, and Technology Committee. I mean, how ridiculous is that? I know I keep coming back to that, but seriously, that's seriously ridiculous. Crow's announcement of running against Smith. It's coming at a time, it basically came around the same time that we're seeing a huge swell of public support for science and understanding the evidence that it is showing us that climate change is indeed real and it is indeed influenced by human activity. And you know, that the kind of support we saw with the Science March a few days ago, was that a week ago? Yeah. Saturday. Yeah. So almost a week ago. And Crow announced his candidacy like right before that. But is it going to matter in a district with wealthy Texans who probably made a lot of money off of oil? I mean, it's Texas. So, I mean, sure, some people made money off of other things, but oil is a big, big business in Texas. Well, after the storm that killed people and destroyed homes, and after the way Smith ignored it and then blamed the weather service, and pointing to the fact that Smith has gotten $750,000 from big oil in his career, and the fact that he sits on the science committee ignoring science while getting paid to do so, you know, this all puts a highlight on Smith and his corruption that that may have been given a pass in oil country so far anyway. There's also another thing to consider here, and this is what I was alluding to earlier that I said I'd get to in a minute, when I said that, you know, Smith is a Republican, and that's not a big surprise coming from Texas. Well, that may be changing here in the not-so-far-away future. Texas is starting to turn kind of purple. Democrats won kind of big in Texas in November. Now, Trump took the state in the presidential election, but his margin wasn't as big as you would have thought in a super red state like Texas, especially running on, you know, his border wall and all that, which Texas Republicans love. So his margin wasn't as big as you would have thought in Texas, and a lot of the Republicans on the state level and local level were unseated, especially in the Houston area. And the Houston area has a lot of the population of Texas. Now, rural Texas is probably going to stay red, but if enough of the urban districts turn blue, then Texas is basically purple, and that means that Republicans don't have as much power or pull. So Crow is banking on this new trend of the purpling of Texas. He's banking on that trend keeping up. He's banking on the general public's dislike for Trump and his policies. He's banking on the renewed love for science that we're seeing as a result of the pushback on Trump's policies. And he's banking on the effects of a storm that Smith decided to basically ignore that cost his district a shitload of money. Now, all of this, plus the obvious corruption with special interest oil money and Smith's indifference to the effects of climate change that finally hit home in a major way in his district, it might just be the recipe to bake him a big old go-fuck-yourself cake. So, now, Crow is a Democrat, and he has worked for Democrats, including Miss Bomb the World, but yeah, I'm a Democrat, Nancy Pelosi. She also, just to point out, she also said that a Democrat can be pro-life or anti-choice when it comes to women's reproductive rights. I believe she said this in defense of Hillary Clinton's VP pick, Tim Kaine, who is also a Republican, just calls himself a Democrat. So that's not really surprising. You can just go ahead and add that to the reasons Nancy Pelosi is a Republican category. So Crow worked with her, and he worked under Adam Smith, the Democrat from Washington State. So he realizes what life in Congress is like. So, I mean, he's not really new to the scene. And yeah, I know, I get it. Hearing me come out in support of two Democrats in one day might be a little shocking. You might be thinking, well, but Richard, you said Democrats aren't worth voting for. Yeah, I did, and I still do. And if these, if there's other people running in these districts who will be better choices than either of these two Democrats, then I'm all for it. Any opportunity that I have to pull support away from the Democratic Party is fantastic. But Pelosi has to go. Smith has to go. The establishment has to go. And yes, Democrats are part of the establishment, and the Democratic Party needs to go. But how do you tear down a monolith? You shake the foundation. You shake it up until you can sit back and watch that bucker crumble into dust. Now, Smith is part of the foundation of the establishment. He's been sitting in that seat for 20 years. Pelosi is part of the foundation of the establishment. She's been sitting in that seat for 20 years. They need to go. Now, these new guys, they've never held office. And they haven't really had the chance to be corrupted yet. Not to say it wouldn't happen. But if we can use these two guys to get those other two pig fuckers out of their seats and shake up the establishment's foundation, it'll only be a matter of time before that fucker comes crumbling down. You know, besides, Jaff is a Bernie-crat. Crow is a climate activist. I can think of worse Democrats we could put into those positions. And the last thing I'll say about it is this. Elections are important all of the time, not just every 4 years. Now, there are instances where an election really, some people run unopposed, you know, or sometimes Democrats run such a weak candidate in a Republican area that that election doesn't matter. But elections are important all the time. The way we affect change is by putting the people into positions of power that are going to listen to the voice of the people. The people we have in positions of power right now are not there listening to the voice of the people. They're there listening to the voices of their donors. We can change that, and we need to change that. If we're not going to change that, then we need to burn the fucker down. One of those two things has to happen. So, I'm all for burning it down. Like I said, burn it down. Rebuild it. It'll be beautiful. It'll be a beautiful thing. But the point is that, like I said, elections are important all of the time, not just every 4 years. I mean, you know why it was so easy for Trump to defund some of these programs? It's because there was nobody in Congress to stand up to him. And I don't mean it's just Republicans going in lockstep. And I don't mean it's the Democrats being in the minority. You know, being in the minority didn't stop old Chucky Boy and Nancy from some supporting Trump bombing Syria with no cause. Chuck needs to go, too. And so does Smith. In fact, term limits all around, term limits. Senators have 6-year terms. Representatives have 2-year terms. So reduce Senate terms to 4 years. Give them 3 terms so they can serve through at least 2 different presidents. Do the same for representatives and get the fucking money out of politics. Make bribery illegal again. All right. Another quick little break. This time it won't be hours long, I promise. And we're going to get back to talking about Ann Coulter and the conversation that has sparked from her little situation in Berkeley. Talk about that in just a minute. Be right back. Stay tuned. Booker, 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 booker. Ha-ha. You know the deal. This is me, though. Beast by Supremo for all of my people, Negroes and Latinos, and even the gringos. Yo, check it, one for Charlie Hustle, two for Steady Rock,
three for the four, come alive, future shock. It's five dimensions, six senses, seven firmaments of heaven to hell. 8 million stories to tell. Nine planets faithfully keep an orbit with the probable tenth. The universe expands length. The body of my text possess extra strength. Power lifted, powerless, up out of this towering inferno. My aim so hot it burned through the journal. I'm blacker than midnight on bro, where you're myrtle. Hip hop past all your tall social hurdles, like the nationwide projects, prison industry complex. Working class poor, better keep your alarm set. Streets too loud to ever hear freedom ring. Say it back in with your sleep. It's dangerous to dream, but your chain cats get they chip back. You dead now. Killing fields need blood to graze the cash cow. It's a numbers game, but shit don't add up somehow. Like I got 16 to 32 bars to rock it, but only 15% of profits ever seen my pockets. Like 69 billion in the last 20 years spent on national defense, but folks still live in fear. Like nearly half of America's largest cities is one quarter black. That's why they gave Ricky Ross all the crap. 16 ounces to a pound, 20 more to a key. A 5 minute sentence hearing and you're no longer free. 40% of Americans own a cell phone, so they can hear everything that you say when you ain't home. I guess Michael Jackson was right, you are not alone. Rock your hard hat black as you in the terror dome. Full of hard niggas, large niggas, dice tumblers. Young teens in prison greens facing life numbers. Crack mothers, crack babies, and AIDS patients. Young bloods can't spell, but they can rock you a PlayStation. Snoo Mav is whipping motherfuckers ass. You wanna know how to rhyme, you better learn how to add. It's mathematics.
Mighty most deaf.
It's simple mathematics. Check it out. I revolve around science.
What are we talking about here? Mighty most deaf.
It's simple mathematics. Check it out. I revolve around science.
What are we talking about here?
One universal law, but two sides to every story. Three strikes and you bitten for life, mandatory. Four MCs murdered in the last 4 years. I ain't trying to be the fifth when the millennium is here. There are 6 million ways to die from the seven deadly thrills. 80-year-olds getting found with 9 mils. It's 10 p.m. where your C's at. What's the deal? They on the hill pumping grills to keep their bellies filled. Lighting the ass with heavy steel. Sights on the pretty shit in life. Young soldiers trying to earn their next strike. When the average minimum wage is 5.15, you best believe you gotta find a new ground to get cream. The white unemployment rate is nearly more than triple for black. So frontliners got their gun in your back. Bubble and crack, jewel theft and robbery to combat poverty and end up in the global jail economy. Stiffer stipulations attached to each sentence. Budget cutbacks but increased police presence. And even if you get out of prison, still living, join the other 5 million under state supervision. This is business. No faces, just lines and statistics. From your phone, your zip code, the SSI digits. The system break, man channeling women in the figures. Two columns for who is and who ain't niggas. Numbers is hard and real and they never have feelings. But you push too hard, even numbers got limits. Why did one straw break the camel's back? Here's the secret. The million other straws underneath it. It's all mathematics.
Mighty most deaf.
It's simple mathematics. Check it out. I revolve around science.
What are we talking about here? Mighty most deaf.
It's simple mathematics. Check it out. I revolve around science.
What are we talking about here?
All right, we are back on A Mostly Accurate View Revolution Radio, and we're going to talk just a little bit about this Ann Coulter situation at Berkeley. I mean, LOL. Seriously, what are you? Ridiculous situation. Literally, nobody gives a shit about Ann Coulter. Not enough. Not even enough to protest her. The supporters, I guess, still held their little rally, and people still spoke, but Ann Coulter wasn't there, and there was no energy. It just shows the MAGA folks didn't show up to support Ann or practice free speech or any of that. They showed up because they wanted to fight and they didn't get to, so they were disappointed. But the leftists are the violent ones. That makes sense, I guess. Seems legit. All right. Okay. So, a little background. Well, I wrote a post, on, mostlyaccurateview.com. You can see it. I encourage you to go and read it. I went into, the background, there a little more extensively, so I'm not going to go too deep here. But basically, Anne was scheduled to speak after being invited by conservative UC Berkeley students who had been influenced to extend that invitation by a group called Young America's Foundation. And that is an ultra right-wing organization that is in love with some overly dramatized memory of the treasonous war criminal Ronald Reagan. Well, apparently the YAF couldn't come to an agreement with Berkeley. They blame the university, and they say that it was because the university was stonewalling them. Berkeley says that they couldn't provide a safe, secure location. The threat of potential violence was too high, and everybody's pointing fingers. And I don't really know or care about any of that, really. It's of little consequence how that all actually went down and played out. It really is of little consequence. The university has a responsibility to ensure safety on its campus, but it also has a responsibility to allow the free flow of ideas. And nobody said that she couldn't come out to speak, only that they had no available secure buildings on that date. They even offered another date and a secure location. So I don't really know what the YAF's problem is, other than the fact that they're Republicans. But regardless, it's the conversation that's happening after that that I care about. And it's quieted down since then. But for about a day, it was pretty, but my free speech. So, you know, once again, you got the whole, you know, my free speech people, and they're crying about being censored. But shut the fuck up. You weren't censored, you little snowflakes. You were just told to take your bullshit somewhere else. And it wasn't the college or the government that said take your bullshit somewhere else. It was the public. The people didn't want you there, and they showed that many times, and you didn't listen the first few times, so they showed you again, louder and louder, until the message was heard. And guess what? That's the exact point of protest. So while you're, you know, trying to cry to Daddy Trump about your rights being violated, you're completely ignoring the fact that free speech in the form of protest is what shut your bullshit down. So unless you don't think that protest is a valid form of free speech, in which case you have no right to claim that hate speech advocating white supremacy and ethnocentric segregation and genocide should be protected free speech. Now, there's the other point that they're missing too. And I went over this briefly in my article, but it needs to be repeated because too many people aren't getting it, or they're refusing to understand it. The First Amendment is a protection, and that's all it is. The language in it is it's a negative language, meaning that it says what can't be done. It's not a positive meaning that it doesn't say what can be done. This is exactly what it says. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. That's what it says. It mentions other things too, like respecting any particular religion, abridging free press, abridging freedom to assemble. But for our purposes right this moment, it says that Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech. So what the First Amendment does is provide a protection in that it says what cannot be done, and it provides protection from the government in that the government cannot do these things. It offers no other protection. It prevents the abuse of the right to free speech by government censorship. Nothing else. And it damn sure doesn't say that anyone can say anything without fear of consequence. And it definitely doesn't say society has to suffer ignorant racist assholes spouting stupid ignorant bullshit. So no, your First Amendment rights are not violated. And actually, I'd like to point out that using a state agency like the police to prevent the public protest of your hateful, ignorant bullshit actually is violation of free speech. It's a violation of the free speech of protesters who are using their speech to combat yours. So, sorry you didn't get the message the first time, so we got louder. And we'll keep getting louder until you understand it. And if you happen to get punched in your shitty, scummy, Nazi mouth because of it, well, don't act like you aren't looking for a fight. I want to do a little experiment right now. Won't take long. Here's what I want you to do. Go to your YouTube app. If you're listening to this on your phone, go to your YouTube app. Or if you're on your computer or laptop, pull up YouTube in your browser. And now I want you to search Antifa, A-N-T-I-F-A. Now, what comes up for you will quite possibly, probably, be very different from what comes up for me because of the many times I search for so many different things. My algorithm is probably way different than yours is. But you should see some things that at least point you in the right direction. You know, find a video that the title says something like Antifa Punk or Antifa Fail or something like that. I didn't tell you to search Antifa Punk because when I did that, it just comes up with a bunch of anarchist and fascist punk rock songs. So go find one of those videos and watch it. And then maybe watch a couple more in the related section and then come back. So go ahead. Pause this. I'll wait. Seriously, go, do it. All right. Did you do it? All right. I hope so. Because if not, you're not going to see what I'm talking about now. So in all of those clips that I hopefully just watched, maybe you saw a video where a bunch of different clips were strung together, or maybe it was just a short clip or two with some guy talking about Antifa and how they are just punks and thugs. But one thing you'll notice about every clip they use, you never see the beginning. You never see how the actual fight starts, only Antifa fighting. And then they will tell you how it was Antifa that started it, but they'll never show you. Maybe 1 out of 10 times they'll show you the beginning. And that's because most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time, it's some overpumped meathead who wants to show how virile and masculine he is by taking on a whole line of Antifa by himself. And then he gets overpowered and all of a sudden the Antifa are the aggressors. Mother Jones recently published an article written by someone who went to the last Berkeley event that turned violent, and they went undercover on the Trump supporter side, the MAGA side, and they were talking about how the police had two sections cordoned off, one for the actual event and one for the Antifa protesters, right? So even the police knew what was coming. So they were checking people, they were searching people, and they were taking, you know, things that could be used as weapons, poles and sticks and pepper spray and knives and all these other things. But then later on in the article, it talks about how when things started getting heated, there was this one Trump supporter or MAGA guy or free speech enthusiast or whatever that had apparently gotten a knife in. Either he was able to sneak it in or it wasn't of sufficient length to be confiscated, or the police weren't searching those guys, just the Antifa guys. One of those three things is what happened. But this guy pulls out a knife, starts brandishing it, and then he is surrounded by Antifa until he backs down. Nobody got stabbed, at least according to this person's account. Nobody got stabbed, but that's what I'm saying. This guy pulls out a knife, is antagonistic, starts brandishing it, and then gets surrounded by opposition. But the Antifa, the protesters, the activists are the ones that are violent. You see how they spin that? So the other side, right? You know, Antifa gets shown as the aggressors intentionally, because the other side, they're, you know, just trying to exercise their free speech, and here come the special snowflakes that need safe spaces invading our safe space. Wait, that came out wrong. What I meant was that the police have a duty to protect us from these wimpy, whiny babies that we can't seem to protect ourselves from. Wait, that came out wrong. What I meant was that we believe in free speech, and we don't want to have to hear what other people have to say about, oh, God damn it. See, but the point is that these video clips that show how Antifa are just violent thugs, and they're always starting some shit, they almost never show the beginning of the fight. And I promise you that the beginning exists. Most times, people have their phones out well beforehand, but they cut out the beginning because they are engaging in a deceptive practice called selective editing. And they use this selectively edited footage to promote a particular narrative, otherwise known as propaganda. And when you are using propaganda in the defense of fascists, you are now using fascist propaganda. Now look, all right, I'm not saying that all Trump supporters are fascists. And I'm not even saying that all Trump supporters are racists. But it certainly seems kind of suspicious when you can find a dense concentration of both racist and fascist at these free speech rallies that are overtly in support of Trump. And these free speech rallies that are overtly in support of Trump seem to happen quite often in or around areas that have people like Milo Snuffleupagus or Ann Coulter speaking. And that's because those people have a hateful, racist rhetoric that appeals to those who need a scapegoat for their troubles. This is how Hitler came to power. This is why we compare it to the rise of Hitler. This is why we call it fascism, because this is the beginnings of it. Richard Spencer called for black genocide. Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. He only posed the question of whether or not black genocide would be a good thing. Forgive me. I would hate to misconstrue something like that. Nathan D'Amigo advocates for segregation and creating, get this, safe spaces for whites where other ethnicities wouldn't be allowed to enter. But leftists are the special snowflakes. Milo Yiannopoulos is a pedophile apologist and also a racist, xenophobic bigot. But he gets a pass on all of that because he's gay? Fuck off. And honestly, nobody gives a shit about Ann Coulter. This is true. But let's not act like she's innocent. She's been very outspoken about her white supremacist views, even going so far as to call the white majority in the U.S. compassionate overlords. She wrote that in a blog post where she was whining about white people becoming the minority in the U.S. and then has the gall to try and say that she isn't racist. Bullshit. So no. The evidence is such that it isn't just Trump supporters trying to exercise their free speech. The evidence points to racists and xenophobes gaming the system to afford themselves protections of law that they wouldn't afford to others. So fuck that. You don't get special treatment, Snowflake. And if you know that Antifa is going to show up and you also show up, don't act like you aren't looking for a fight, because that's exactly what you're looking for. Now, the rally that was still held for Ann, it was low energy and nobody gave a shit what the speakers had to say because they weren't there for the speakers. They were there looking for a fight. So stop being so goddamn hypocritical and stop defending indefensible views and speech. Stop defending hateful rhetoric. The free speech is not a disagreeable position. It's got violent undertones and it causes violence. All right, well, I'm done. It's late, and I'm going to get this thing cleaned up and edited and uploaded hopefully tonight, so it'll be ready for you tomorrow. Thanks for joining. Again, you can always get in touch with me, mostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. Tweet at mostly_accurate. You can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/amostlyaccurateview. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, or directly on amostlyaccurateview.com. Share your comments, share your thoughts. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear about, what you agree with, what you disagree with. We look forward to hearing from you and definitely look forward to talking to you again. We'll see you real soon. And until then, keep talking. Keep thinking and keep moving forward. Have a great day.